Welcome to the Self-Publishing Tips and Tricks Show, a series designed to give you insight into the world of self-publishing and marketing your books. Featuring your hosts, Shannon, the author behind the pen name S.C. Houston, Ben Pick, and Morgan Lee. Join us several times each month when we interview authors about their self-publishing and marketing journeys, talk to industry leaders, and discuss books about writing, self-publishing, and marketing. Also stay tuned for the best self-publishing tip or trick of the week.
Hello, everyone. Today we are interviewing with YouTuber and nonfiction and paranormal romance author Rachel D. Adams. But before we talk to her, let's give some updates on whatever's happening in our own lives. So what do you guys got going on?
Yeah. So this is coming out mid-March. I will have just finished AwesomeCon as an author there, which is going to be a lot of fun. It is a local conference, so hopefully I saw you all there. And in theory, I'm pushing really hard to get my third book out by that date. If I miss that window, it depends on when my professional editor comes back to me and how busy work is with making those changes. So either I'll have my third book already out there, or it will be coming very, very shortly.
I'm excited to see the changes. I really did love the story and where it went. It kind of expanded the world so much more. I got a chance to beta read it. And I know that, Morgan, you had a chance to developmentally edit it.
Yeah, thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you to both of you, actually. Yeah.
Well, we hope to be helpful.
I hope so.
You were both phenomenal.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to hearing about your conference when you go to that and what comes out of that. So, as for me, as of the date this releases, March 15th, I'm hoping that I will be finishing up with the next book in my series, A Curse of Wings and Gems, but I'm a little bit behind my timetable because I had an alternate short story for my Kickstarter backers that is now almost 50,000 words long. So it's not a short story. And it should have been done by now, but it is really long. So I hope to finish it by the end of January, but I should have had January to work on my novel. And so that might put me behind by another month when I was hoping. Also, with the AuthorTube Writing Conference, we would have already done all of our rounds of reviews. So right now, at this moment, we are actually heading into our first round of review between myself and Margaret Nard. And then, but by March 15th, all the rounds will be done. And then all the initial guest speakers who are accepted and the initial speakers who are accepted will have received their acceptances. And that's kind of those are a couple rounds, because even if we say, hey, you know, you've been accepted to be a speaker, some people come back and say, oh, something came up, I can't do it. So then we send out another round of acceptances. And then once we have enough people filling all the slots, then we send out the rejections. So we'll be finishing that process up. People should be getting their emails by this point and should know who's speaking. And it'll be good. And trying to get all that set up. May 1st is when we'll reveal to the public the full lineup. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not really sure where I will be or what I'll have coming out at the time of recording this episode. Still doing videos on my channel every other Saturday and working on the first book in a new cozy fantasy series. And then hopefully book 3 of my current series will be finished up at that time and getting ready to release sometime in the future. So yeah, that is everything that I have going on. Now let's talk about our guest author today. As a Gen Xer, her original writing was done in notebooks and on an old-fashioned typewriter. This was before the internet existed. She wrote stories about places and people around her, fictionalizing as she did. She also began writing fan fiction before there was a place for it. She loves collaborative writing, and many of her works are co-authored with partners who share her passion for deep character development. She loves fantasy and horror most, both reading and writing. Not just an author of fiction, she writes content for websites, partners with her husband on projects, and shares personal interest stories and professional development articles on Medium. Rachel firmly believes that we should all be uplifting one another. She supports fellow creatives whenever she can. Rachel also loves cooking, eating, coffee, gaming, photography, swirls, and Guinness. So let us welcome Rachel to the screen. Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm busy this weekend, so.
Nice. Would you like to take a moment to tell us anything else about yourself or anything that we might have missed?
I don't know that you missed anything. People have asked me about what do I mean by fan fiction before there was a place for it. So I'll say that I used to watch a lot of shows on television and then write my own versions of stories about them. And In my high school, I had a group of friends that would do this all the time. So it was almost like we had our own fan fiction thing going, but we were doing it in notebooks and kind of meeting over the lunch table, telling each other stories.
Awesome. I love that. So what made you want to start writing?
I'm not really sure what made me want to start writing. I always had a vivid imagination. And so I would tell myself stories as an only child and kind of being by myself a lot of the time. I had to come up with entertainment. And so that was entertainment for me. Also, when I started making friends and moved into a place that I had the availability of friends, they enjoyed the stories too. And we would go out in the woods and kind of make our own stories up as we went.
I made up stories in the woods too, so I know that. So I know that you have published several works with co-authors, and I don't know if your first self-published work was with a co-author, but can you tell us about leading up to that and how you published that first work?
So the first work, Doppelgangers in Deceit, was a co-author work. And when we published Tavella too, both of those are co-author works. I published previously, but it was more of a journalistic publishing, so I don't count that. Yeah, how we came up to that was through a collaborative writing board. Role-playing boards. Back when there were Yahoo clubs and MSN groups, we got together. I think it was the first one was a fantasy board, actually, that we had pulled together. And a lot of writers and artists that I knew at the time, that's how I actually got into going to conventions early, because we would share convention stories. We would be like, hey, let's meet up at a convention. And so if we had the money at the time, which was tight, but we managed to do a few of them, we would all decide we were going to meet up someplace like that. And so Tina and I, which her name on the cover is Dawn because she wanted to use her middle name, but it's not a secret. It's just that she likes her middle name more.
That's a D and my name is Dawn. That's my middle name.
She got with me and we were discussing it for a long time, but we did this as a hobby. We were thinking about publishing, but yet we weren't thinking about publishing. You know, it was kind of like, you know. And then my husband and her husband at the same time, I'm not sure if they had some sort of cosmic connection, got onto us because we were spending so much time writing these stories and not trying to publish them. So it was that year that he introduced me to several different people online or publishing courses online. And I wound up taking Publish and Thrive and then checking into AuthorTube and deciding, okay, I think I can do this. And so I've become the marketing guru and Tina is my creative force. So that's how we partner up.
What year was that you published your first book together?
2022. Yeah.
Still new to publishing then.
Yes. Yes. We had the first book out and we realized that there were a lot of mistakes in it. So we actually had to do kind of a revision version of it later. But it was what I call the learning curve.
Nice, nice. Well, it seems like you have such a broad journey from those journals in the lunchroom all the way up to self-publishing now. But what made your decision to self-publish versus traditionally publishing? Did anyone or anything inspire you to go that route?
Going to Gen Con and meeting a lot of the authors there face-to-face was a huge wake-up call for me. I believe that a lot of the authors had stories about at the time that they had some horror stories to deal with. They also, this was where the internet started really having the big impact, especially with women writers. There was a big clash going on wherein people couldn't get specific stories published the way that you would think ideally you should be able to publish certain stories. These were stories that involved women as protagonists and in power positions within the book. Also like authors that were science fiction and fantasy authors, but they were women at the time, had a hard time breaking through to that. And there were also not as many diverse and LGBT friendly stories out there. So my thought was, I'm going to try to self-publish first and see how it goes, because there's more of a market there for what I write. Also, there was an author in particular that came on to the scene at one of the conventions. He was a traditionally published author, and he and his wife had been writing these little stories to the side, and it reminded me of me and Tina doing the same thing. And they decided they wanted to publish it, but nobody wanted to touch it. Not their publishing company, not two others that he tried to go through. And he decided, okay, well, we're going to make our own website. We're going to promote it ourselves. And we're going to kind of do a subscription service. And then at the end of the subscription service, everybody gets a book. And they did it that way. It made more money for him. He was like, we made more money on this book than we make most of the time when it comes to my other published work. And then all of a sudden, his publishing company's like, hey, so about that book. That kind of also played into it a lot.
So you've had two co-authors, Don McClellan and Athena, is it Seta or Seta?
Seta.
Yes. Seta. Athena Seta. How did you come to start working with both of them?
The same way. Me and a friend of mine, we owned a lot of the fan fiction boards. We did fan fiction of different science fiction realms and also Marvel. I think we had one DC. We had Star Trek, something based kind of on a mixture of Firefly and Marvel. We did all these kind of things. And also, of course, the fantasy realms. And I met both of my co-authors through those kind of groups. And we started in the groups writing stories with each other. And then it just kind of moved on from there. The stories that you're seeing that are the Dragon Tasker series and everything that's involved in those stories comes from our first fantasy groups that we shared. Then after I started running some of the groups and moderating some of the groups, we tried to do some of our stories there, but our co-authors kind of had real life issues come up and they couldn't continue. So we just took our parts of the stories and moved them to what became Google Docs so that we could work together. I think it used to be called Lilypad or Pads or something like that. So we started doing it there and we were just saving them off to the side. The same thing happened with Athena. We were in several of the groups together and we just stayed in touch when we drifted apart in the groups and we became gaming friends. Then we decided, hey, we're bored. Let's try this. Let's do this. So we write different kinds of stories.
So how does working with a co-author work for you? Like, how do you guys divide up the task and do you sign contracts? We just love to know what that looks like for you guys.
For us, we have verbal agreements. We don't have signed contracts. I imagine if you were working with somebody collaboratively and you needed contracts, that would be a good idea. But where Tina and I are concerned, we've known each other for over 20 years. We've raised kids kind of parallel to each other across the United States. So we haven't decided whether or not we want to do a contract. I guess as we move from not making money and just reinvesting the money into the books, into actually making money, then contracts would be something that we would look into. Right now, what we're doing is she's a full-time nurse and takes care of a lot of stuff in her family right now. So she's not able to do as much as I'm able to do. I've been put in a position where I have the ability to put my full-time effort into my writing career. So I'm doing the marketing and the things like that. And we both rewrite stuff. We both write stuff. We both edit stuff and do revisions. We make decisions together for our creative portions of the book. But I'm the one that's going to probably be the main person that you're going to see on everything. And I'm the one that's going to be out there doing as much as I can as far as marketing and stuff is concerned.
Cool. Yeah, we've had somebody on here who was in a similar situation where they were kind of more of the vocal of the pair. So it's always interesting kind of seeing that dynamic in other teams or friend groups or co-authors or whatever situation. Do you have any tips or tricks for writing as a co-author?
Be able to trust each other, be able to give your co-author the reins and just see what happens. So many of our scenes have played out because we didn't have an exact plan. We just kind of threw the ball and we waited to see what happened. I believe that's my main tip. Also, make sure that you both are aware of what your roles are when it comes to doing the collaborative side of things. I mean, I've heard several people get upset because they're doing all the work or whatever. And it's like, well, we discussed ahead of time, you know, where we stood and how we had to do things if we were going to actually make this happen. So I know what my responsibilities are. And Tina has been there to support me every step of the way when she has problems and stuff go on. I mean, we're friends. So I'm like, hey, call me up, you know, let's talk this through. So I would say be able to trust the person that you're co-writing with, because if you don't trust the person that you're co-writing with, that could lead to a lot of problems.
So you have several books and two Kindle Vellas published currently. How did you decide which you were going to sell as books and which you were going to put on a serialized platform like Kindle Vella?
We decided that we wanted to put the main series that we had written, which is a story that goes from introducing the characters in the world all the way to solving the very first problem that comes up within that world for our main characters. That would make a great serial as far as releasing as a book, so that we would have on the business side of things a loss leader reader and then the serial that follows it to help hook people into the world. And we needed a reader magnet, which is the book that you give for free or the story that you give for free, so that we could give people an incentive to be on a newsletter, because I had seen so many failures with social media and with people losing their social media stuff. I wanted to take that advice and actually use it and not be one of those victims. So I made my own newsletter, and we were like, well, how are we going to do this? And about that time was when Kindlevella was in the beta stages and just a new thing. I had been looking at a lot of the serial possibilities out there, and I didn't really like them as much. We knew that we were going to publish to Amazon at some point, even though we're wide. I wanted to have a presence there. So Bella allowed us to actually start our reader magnet. The stories that we were going to put in our reader magnet, put them out there for people to comment on. And that way we had a timekeeper, so to speak. Like, if we're putting them out there weekly, you're going to get like a chapter a week or a scene a week. And we're actually pulling everything up, we're editing it, and then we're putting it out there and we're getting your comments. And then we can move on to the next part. And then at the end, collect all of that, tell Amazon Vella Associates, hey, we're going to take this off of Vella. So that gave us 2 months of time to get the book ready. And so that's the reason we have a reader magnet, is because we used Vella as our guideline to do the reader magnet. And so now...
Is it your published book is a reader magnet? I'm trying to visualize what you're saying with the reader magnet. Is that like, that's something you're giving away for free? So that's not on the Kindlevella platform, right?
It is not on the Kindlevella platform anymore. We do have the rest of the story on the Kindlevella platform, but that particular part is gone.
So the reader magnet at the end, do you put like, hey, if you want the story that follows, go follow our Kindlevella? Is that like what you have? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. We make sure that in our back matter, we place a link for both the rest of the series. And also the Kindlevella links, so that they know that if they want other stories about these characters, that they can go there. Because the Kindlevella wound up being our prequel series, is what we did. It's all
the reader magnet started on Kindlevella, and then you turned it into the reader magnet. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah, and that's how we decided what was going to be there and what was going to be actually published. So we still have 20 years worth of stories with these characters saved up that we can turn into new series, but in the same world.
I was going to say, for you guys publishing in 2022, I mean, that's like barely over a year ago, depending on when you actually publish, but you've got a lot of books out. So it's a lot of work. So you guys have that story backlog though. So that probably helps quite a bit.
The backlog helps quite a bit. Basically, we're taking our stories. We're making a series plotter, or I've made a series plotter to decide what stories would fit for a full series. And then we're just taking the stories that we've already written and we're putting them in there. We're revising them. We're adding more chapters depending on what we need at that point in the plotter. And then we're going back and sending them to readers, getting their feedback, editing it again. You know, it's a complete cycle, what we're doing to make sure that we have plenty of books out there, or that we're going to have plenty of books available. I've also starting to work on a Ream platform too.
So I think that's a pretty good idea to have for anybody who may have been writing stories for years about how they could take those stories and make it into something more, which you guys have done. I'm also starting on Ream. I'm actually part of the second cohort that's going through, and I just met with my team lead this past week to go over my tiers, and she liked my tiers. So I'm hoping to have that up and going soon as well. But,
nice. Yeah, I've waited. I kind of waited on Ream because I wanted to get at least 2 books out. And so we have the first book in the main series and the second book in the main series both out. The third book in the main series is going to be out later this year. And we have the prequel story, which is our reader magnet, but we have book 2 in that prequel series. We didn't realize we had a series on our hands at the time, but that's what it has become. So that we're hoping to have out by April of this year. They're shorter stories compared to the main series, but they're a full novel.
So do you have any tips or tricks for publishing serial fiction? Because I know that's a bit different than publishing a full book.
When you're publishing serial fiction, you want to make sure that you're giving your readers what they really want, and you're able to move a little quicker when it comes to each episode or toward the main goal of what you're trying to get to. But also do your best to make a hook at the end of each episode so that your readers want to keep going. That I honestly admit I struggle with sometimes, because my mind is so focused on the end goal and I know it's going to be fun. But what helps out where Bella is concerned, and I haven't played around with Ream enough to know yet, but even at the end of an episode, I imagine I could just write a little author note, if nothing else. The author notes help out a lot, because then people will look down and go, oh, I see this is about to happen, so maybe I should tune in for the next episode. So that's the main thing. It's also also, I mean, I was always taught, I guess, from high school to try and have a what's called a bridge between your chapters so that there's something that kind of smooths the transition. And I've taken that and kind of worked it into that hook idea, even inside the books, to try and make sure people have a little hook at the end of each chapter that makes them go, ooh, I wonder what they're talking about there.
Yeah. So on Ream, you can use it as a serialized fiction platform, and you can also do the author note at the end, but you don't have to use it that way. There are different models. And I'm using the model of early access, where I'm going to be offering, and it will be almost like serialized fiction, but it's not. It's, and I put it very clear, it's early access to rough draft chapters. So it's almost like having an alpha reader if they join and they read each chapter as it comes out.
Yeah. So that's one of the tiers that I listed, was that that availability. I'm still working on it. I'm going to let people look at it, because I'm like, ooh, this is, I haven't done a, I did a Patreon a long, long time ago, but I shut that down real quick because nobody could actually follow you. I mean, unless they gave you something. And I was like, I mean, I get that nothing should be free. You should get like an email address or at least, you know, the availability to say, hey, I've got a follower here or whatever. But at the same time, I didn't like the idea that they had to be, it was restricting them to, they have to be a subscriber. So on this version, I was thinking of doing the same thing. I'm going to have something that's going to be released that is serial, but at the same time, going to be doing the what you're doing with one of the tiers, in that they get access to see a story being put together.
Early access is what they call it.
Early access.
Yeah.
If you could pass on only one thing to aspiring self-published writers, what is your best tip or trick for publishing?
Probably be making sure that you plan for a little bit of everything. Make sure you have time. When I started publishing, I went wide and I thought, oh, this is going to be simple. We're just going to insert everything. Everything's going to run smoothly. That is not the case. You have different time frames that material is going to be available for each platform. Each platform needs all of your financial information up front. That has to be approved. There could be any number of problems with that that you have to fix. Each platform has their own way of approving things. Each platform has their own way of telling you, no, we're not going to accept this, or yes, we will accept this. It's insanity. I mean, it's worth it, but it can be insanity. I've had to have one particular platform go back about 5 times with me to go through a manuscript and figure out what was causing the issue. And had I already set my date, and had I already, you know, had everything ready, the party and everything, and had I waited to the last minute to input all of that information, it would have been late. It would have been too late. So give yourself plenty of time when you're self-publishing to get everything up, ready, and right before you are really, you know, pushing it.
I can attest to that. Yeah. And I just had a conversation, because I went back and forth with Draft to Digital for the print book for my book that's coming out, A Curse of Scales and Feathers. And they're like, your ISBN is already being used. You have to use a new ISBN. I'm like, no, I pay for my ISBN. It should be just fine.
Yes.
And they're like,
one of them.
Yeah. And they're like, no, you're using it to distribute it. And I'm like, I'm not distributing it anywhere. And I thought, well, wait, I am using the beta feature on Ingram Spark to distribute on my website. So I was like, that shouldn't matter though. That's still my ISBN. I pay for that. So I should be able to use it everywhere. And then we went back and forth. And finally, I'm good buddies with Dale L. Roberts. And I text him. I was like, Dale, does this sound right? He was like, what they're not telling you is that Draft to Digital uses the same distribution as Ingram Spark. So they already have your ISBN on file with Ingram. So you have to delist it from Ingram Spark and then go through them. I'm like, but then I can't do my direct sales on my website. He was like, yep, that's the issue. And he says, that's Draft to Digital's issue and they need to figure it out. And you know, he says, I've been telling them this.
But it becomes our issue.
because now I can't have it on Draft to Digital. So now I'm going to go and distribute my book wide through Ingram Spark instead of using Draft to Digital. But I was like, I text back to him and I was like, it's no wonder people go with Amazon and stick with Amazon. They make it easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I've not ever had a problem with Amazon. Everything is just so smooth so far, and knock on wood, so far it's been smooth. I've seen horror stories about people getting their stuff taken down because of one reason or another, and they weren't sure what happened. I'm hoping that never happens. But yeah, I couldn't understand that either. I've changed the order in which I've input my books because of it, because they will not accept the ISBN after it's somewhere else. I've also given up on fighting people about it when it comes to ISBNs. I'm like, look, I'm not gonna pay for an ISBN for each one of you guys. It's not happening. Those things are expensive. So in some cases,
they offered me a free ISBN, which Dale said, why didn't you take that? And I said, because I don't want to have multiple ISBNs on one book.
Same. I hate the idea, but I have to admit I did do that this last time because I was just so flustered with it.
I can understand that feeling.
So we're going to transition away from publishing into marketing. So you mentioned earlier that you're like a marketing guru of your co-writing duos. So how does marketing look different between the published books and the Kindle Vella?
Well, the published books, I do admit that I do some marketing when it comes to those, when it comes to like paid ads and stuff. Those work very well. But when it comes to the Kindle Vella, I stay more on promo groups or groups that embody social media groups that embody the genre. They usually have the genre that of fantasy, paranormal romance, urban fantasy, things like that. And also groups that are geared toward Vella, serial readers. I have gotten so much more from that, from being active in those groups, than from doing any kind of promos. Other than, I do admit, Story Origin is a really good platform for both Vella and the books. When you do swaps and stuff, you can, as long as you specifically state that the swap that you're doing is a Kindle Vella swap, I would say most of the ones that I've done swaps or group promos with have allowed it. They're fine with it. I have gotten a lot more. I can tell by my numbers go when the reads go up and the numbers transition that those work. I know that with books, I do use the promos as well, but the paid ads work well also with books a lot better.
But what marketing have you tried that you would never do again?
I mean, I don't have a list, but there, I what I do is I keep track of it to the side. I try to run just different campaigns at different times so that I can tell which campaign is working, which campaign is not working. And I think there's a couple of them that I think one was specific to LGBTQ.
Are you talking about like Amazon ads?
No, these are blog ads. They're blog ads or ads that go with specific websites where they promote books while they're doing their blogging or whatever. And I don't get a lot of return off of those. So what I've done is I use the resources that I can from those, and I also collect information about my titles and authors on those websites. But then I just use those and reach out and make contact with them and follow them on social media and kind of network that way instead of paying for the ads on those sites. So I probably won't do that anymore. I probably won't do those kind of ads.
Well, then let's shift to something positive. What is one big tip you could give for aspiring self-published writers in terms of marketing?
Don't be afraid to go on a budget. Don't be too enthusiastic about spending money. You don't actually have to spend a lot of money to make it happen. I got overwhelmed with how much money some people spend on their marketing campaigns. And I thought, oh, maybe I should just give up. Wow, that's a lot to spend. And I don't make that much money. So I was like, okay, well, what can I do? So when I got into the mode of, okay, look, I've got $300, period. That's it. And then I started being very picky about where I could go. And if it was free, yes. I said yes to just about anything that was free. And it worked out really well, actually, compared to what I thought was going to happen. I can't say that I'm like number one in anything, but I'm pleased with the results. And I think too many people allow themselves to get overwhelmed thinking that they're going to have to put tons of money into the advertising budget. When you're first starting out and you don't have that much of a backlist, I would say don't worry about it that way. Look into the free stuff. Look into the stuff that gives you a lot of quantity for a lower price. Look into newsletter swaps with authors that also sell books that are similar to yours. A big boost for me, especially when it came to my newsletter numbers, was getting on board with other fantasy and paranormal romance authors and swapping and making sure that we had newsletter swaps in place. Also promos. I found several promos that were only $10, maybe $5 each, but they were going to thousands of people that were geared toward my genre, or they were geared toward Vella in particular. And so it didn't cost me a lot out of pocket, but my books and my titles got in front of thousands of people, and the numbers were great for those. And people oftentimes will just be like, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go for the Amazon ads and the Facebook ads and stuff. And you don't have to just do the ads.
Well, I mean, not to give her that much. Shannon actually created this wonderful video about free marketing. It was, a year or two ago. And I use that thing every time I go through this marketing iteration for my own books. And so it's a wonderful resource to use for free marketing. There was also one you did that was paid too. But since, Rachel, you were talking about the free and focusing on trying to get to as large of an audience as possible, spending as little money as possible. That video is a very great resource.
Oh, it is. I used it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And I was going to say that kind of speaks to, I'm going through the Amazon ads course, which is free with Brian Cohen. And of course, it's, I went through it a couple of years ago, but I'm going through it again because things are updating and he has updated some of the things that he says that he suggested before are different now. But I like what they home in all the time. It's like, if it's not working, especially if you are paying for something, whether ads or whatever, if it's not working, don't throw more money at it.
Right.
Move on to something else.
Yeah, because I've had so many people be like, oh, well, did you do a test? Did you do two side-by-side tests? Did you? Maybe it's just something that you're not doing right. And I'm like, but I'm not going to spend more money on it just to figure this out immediately. I mean, I'm going to put my money elsewhere where I know that it can do better, or I'm just going to pull back and regroup.
And he says some books, some series are just not profitable and you have to move on to your next one.
Mm-hmm. Actually, this morning before we got on with this interview, I canceled one of those advertising services that I've been doing for a while. So just didn't seem like it was working for me.
And that's exactly what I had to do. As much as, I mean, I enjoy getting some of the newsletters that I was getting, and I still do. I enjoy the newsletters, but just because you enjoy it doesn't mean that it's going to be profitable for you. And it wasn't. So I had to stop that. I was like, no, this is kind of a leak on the side. It's not working.
Yeah, there's so much information to like take in when it comes to marketing. So I appreciate all of the tips and tricks that we get on marketing on this podcast. So thank you for that. So we're going to move gears a little bit into your writing life and about your works. So what does your typical writing life look like? Do you plan a set time of day to write, a set number of words? How does your goals work with writing?
I have to work everything around things that happen within the family and also within my health care. So what I'll do is usually set things up based on goals for the quarter. And then I took the HB90 course and it opened my eyes and my brain a little bit to planning. Whereas before it was just hit or miss. Now I actually set goals. Used to it was just hit or miss, but now I actually set goals. I will set myself three major goals for the quarter, sometimes four. Then I will go through and in each month, I usually keep a planner with me. Here it is. So I usually keep a planner with me and I will actually write in what my tasks are that, or my projects are that will lead me to those particular goals. So I just put them all on here, all of my projects and tasks that I need to accomplish. Then as it gets to that week, I will decide, okay, so what do I need to do to make sure that project gets done? And I'll break it down into tasks for that project that I need to get done during that week. I also make sure that I'm not overdoing it because I can only do screen time so long per day. So I have to take little breaks. That's where sprinting comes in handy, because if I'm watching a stream sprint, I know that I could go through two sprints of screen time and then I need to take one sprint of a break, usually is what I need to do so that I give my eye time to rest. Otherwise I'll start seeing double vision and that's never good for a writer.
On your website, you advertise and offer author services. Can you explain to us and tell us more about how you balance that with, you know, balance your business of writing with actually writing?
Well, what I do is I make sure that I don't take on any assignments that will overwhelm me or keep me from my writing and revising. I have to make sure that project is the number one project. Otherwise, it'll get swamped by everything else. I have made sure that I don't take, for instance, beta reading. I know that I'm a slow reader. I know that I only have so much time to do it. So I will only take on one beta read for a month. And the same goes for everything else. Now, things like a quick blurb help, quick things like that that have a quicker turnaround time, those I don't mind doing in the interim, but I have to make sure that I'm always keeping my writing and release schedule first and foremost. And I think that that's why I just don't take on too much and it stays pretty balanced.
All right. So what are you working on next? And can you tell us when it will come out?
I am working on, we're waiting on beta readers to get done with A Vampire's Dragon, which is prequel book number 2. Hoping to get it out in April, if not before April. That is because I got accepted as a vendor at the Renaissance Festival that's nearby. So I kind of want to have some books available for it, not just the rest of the books, but that cover in particular, because on the cover is the first time that my cover artist tried Sinius as a dragon. And it's really pretty. pretty. It's
Dragon Ball.
Yes, especially at Ren Fairs. So all the other covers show everybody as human, other than I think the prequel that is the Reader Magnet does show kind of a dragon and a wolf on it, but those are kind of, you know, not as flashy as a dragon. Let's be honest. We love our dragons. And so because it's a dragon shifter, I wanted to kind of wait until a little bit later in the releases to have this happen. And so I'm really excited about it. Also, I told you before, I'm trying to get my ream set up. So I'm going to be releasing, hopefully, a companion series, because like I said, we've got 20 years worth of work and we want to be able to use it to the best. And ream just seems like it's the perfect place for that. We can release books ahead of time and let people comment on them and then take that and create books from it. So the companion series. And oh, look, one of my draggies.
Sorry, that was the wrong, but yeah, that's Rachel's shirt. I know that people who are listening cannot see the shirt, but she does have a merch store. Rachel has a merch store with dragons, so I had to get one.
So those were, I came from gaming background and I have a lot of gaming emotes and stuff. And so when we decided to start with merch, I was like, look, I've got to make a dragon. So I call them my draggies, but they're cute little chibi dragons with little expressions and stuff on their face and things. And so I released different types of sayings with them every so often. And she's got the one that's, what is it? Be careful or you'll end up in my writing.
Yeah, it says, be careful or you'll end up in my novel.
There you go.
And it's a cute little dragon typing in front of a computer. So that's to give you a little visual. Yes. For those who just audio.
Oh, and you know how the Apple has the little Apple symbol on the computer? This one has a little dragon symbol on the computer.
So at this point in the interview, we'd like to do something a bit different. We'd love to do a round of rapid fire questions where you answer each question as quickly as possible. Are you game for it?
I can try.
Okay. All right. First one is, what comes first for you? The characters, the setting, or the plot?
The characters.
Morning writer or evening writer?
Evening writer.
Planner, pantser, or planter?
Planter.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Can you complete the sentence? The best thing about writing is?
Getting my characters home.
Complete this sentence. The best thing about writing with a co-writer is?
The next surprise that comes up.
Favorite book you've read?
Moon Tiger.
Least favorite character from your novels?
Least favorite? Oh,
do you love all your characters?
I kind of like all of them, including the bad guys. Andrew Kennedy. Evil, evil, evil.
Favorite fantasy character from literature?
That would be Drit Storden from the Dark Elf series by R.A. Salvatore. But I also love Jarl Axel, by the way. Again, the bad guy.
All right, complete this sentence. The best thing about writing about dragons is?
The unpredictability. They are, in my world, they're very unpredictable.
Nice. Well, thank you. You have answered all of our questions. So before we wrap up, can you please tell our listeners where they can find you and purchase your books?
I have a website that the Hubs and I have completely redesigned it. That's also one of my ventures. So you can go to racheldadams.com. I also have a Linktree that's available. You can find me on YouTube if you're an author and want to do stream sprints, or if you want any advice. I'm planning on putting a schedule finally together, I promise, of author advice stuff. I've gone like 2 years and people have been like, why haven't you done something like that? So that's coming. I believe those are the main places to find me, because if you go to any of those, you'll also find all of the other links.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us your insight and experience. It was a pleasure to have you here.
It was a pleasure to be here.
So this is our last guest author interview for this season, but the season isn't done yet. Next week, we'll have another tip or trick of the week, which we will continue until season 5. We also have a special episode with several guest authors about marketing that will come out April 15th. So stay tuned to hear more about that. And that's all. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you so much to our incredible listeners and viewers for joining us on our exploration of everything self-publishing. We hope you found our podcast to be a treasure trove of insights and inspiration. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform or a thanks on our YouTube episodes. Don't forget, you can catch all of our past episodes on YouTube, Spotify, and other major podcast platforms. And if you'd like to connect with us, drop us a line at selfpublishingtips.com. tips tricks@gmail.com. Keep writing, keep publishing, and we'll see you next time.